there's a competition that takes place that I never realized actually took place. But now that I know it happens, next year I'll be trying to be a part of this. Maggie says I'm pretty good at these sort of things. And so a guy named Franklin, though, Wilberg, won a contest called, and he's now the official champion of liars contest that takes place pretty much once a year. Some club does this in some place in the world. And so basically what you have to do to be part of this competition is you send in a sentence or something, just a lie, and you'll get the gif. I'll read you the real champ's biggest lie that won it for Franklin. And then those judges sort of judge you to see who has the best lie. And so the winning lie was this. There are three kinds of people in the world. Those who are good at math and those who are not. Now, there are some honorable mentions, of course, coming up that didn't quite win it, but they were close. A guy named Garth C. Anyways, a guy named Garth. I don't know his last name. He almost won because he made the grandkids a telephone of two tin cans and a string. They thought it was great at first, but they threw it away after the 10th or 11th telemarketer call. I think you guys like that one better than the first one. A guy named Thomas, the train, I guess. There are so many political yard signs up during the last election that Thomas accidentally voted for Shore West Realtors. All right, you guys are getting hang of this now. All right. Rick said that you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. But if you grab it by its ears and hold a snout in the bucket long enough, it will either drink or learn to breathe through its eyes. I don't know about that. Bruce of, Wisconsin, said the winter in northern Wisconsin was so severe last year that I was able to sublet the basement of my ice fishing shanty. So I butchered that one. Shows you how often I go ice fishing. Ellen, her friend is so cheap that when she wakes up in the morning, she looks under her bed to see if she lost any sleep. And the last one, honorable mention of Jim, was my wife had so many magnets attached to the refrigerator during the winter months, causing it to run backwards. We now use it for a heating appliance. Great lies sent in by people, and I gotta start thinking on mine for next year. In Genesis chapter 16, there's a story about a guy named Abram, who we know as Abraham, whose name has changed, his wife Sarah, and a lady, Sarah's slave named Hagar. Before we read this story, there's some background you need to understand about Abram and his wife. You see, the story of Abraham starts in Genesis chapter 12. And out of the blue, just God calls Abram and says, you know what? Leave your land and follow me to a place, and go where I'm going to send you. And I will bless you. I'll make you a great nation. And that's it. Abram and his wife pick up, they trust God, and they leave. And the stories go between the chapters of 12 and 16. We have stories of God blessing Abraham and his wife. Make them very rich, very prosperous, a lot of cattle, a lot of land. They are very blessed people, except for one thing. They still don't have a child. Sarah is old. She's beyond the years of bearing children. And I wonder what she's thinking at this point. Is God a liar? Is God the greatest liar of all? I can't bear children anymore. And so in Genesis chapter 12, no, 16. Genesis chapter 16, the story is we're going to be looking at for the next few weeks. Now Sarah, Abram's wife, had borne him no children, but she had an Egyptian maidservant named Hagar. So she said to Abram, the Lord has kept me from having children. Go sleep with my maidservant. Perhaps I can build a family through her. Abram agreed. Okay, first of all, This doesn't, if you're familiar with the story or not, this so far doesn't sound like a too smart of an idea. But heck, here, take, you go with my husband. It doesn't seem like things are going to go uphill from here. Abram agreed to what Sarah said. So after Abram had been living in Canaan 10 years, Sarah took his wife, took her Egyptian maidservant Hagar, and gave her to her husband to be his wife. He slept with Hagar, and she conceived. When she knew she was pregnant, she began to despise her mistress. Then Hagar began to despise her mistress Sarah. Then Sarah said to Abraham, "You are responsible for the wrong I'm suffering. I put my servant in your arms, and now that she knows that she is pregnant, she despises me. May the Lord judge between you and me." "Your servant is in your hands," Abram said. "Do with her whatever you think best." Then Sarah mistreated Hagar, and she fled from her. So Sarah, I don't really know what's going on with Sarah inside. You know, she's been waiting for this promise of God for a long time. Many, many years. You know, and still God hasn't delivered on the promise. And she actually says to Abram, she says to him, "Look, God has prevented me from giving birth, from having a child. He's stopped me. God is somehow against me giving. He has stopped this." Now, God has been known to make women barren. He's done that in Genesis 20. There's a story of a whole nation of all the women God stops from being able to become pregnant because of the sin of a king. And then once the king sort of does the right action, God opens the wombs again. So God has been known to do this, but I don't really believe that God is guilty of this. You know, you could debate me on this, and it's not too clear, but I believe it's because Sarah was barren. That's one of the reasons why God chose Abraham and Sarah, and it's one of the reasons I believe why Sarah and Abraham were so willing to follow God, but that's another topic. What matters, though, is what Sarah believes. She believes God has somehow stopped her from giving birth, that he's preventing her from having a child. I don't know if you've known anybody that hasn't been able to have a child. I mean, that's a painful thing to go through. I mean, I can imagine some of the feelings that the women have who can't give birth, who want to. There's the feeling of they're inadequate, that they're not complete or whole because they can't do this natural function. And it's painful every time you go see a baby, painful every time you go to a baby shower. And to be honest with you, the people I know that go through this, it's to me, I believe it's hell on earth for them. It's painful. And it's uncomfortable when you have kids around someone who doesn't because you know there's a yearning inside of them. Well, in the culture that Abraham and Sarah were in, if you couldn't give birth, you would have your maidservant. You would give your maidservant to your husband, who would get pregnant, and then once the child was born and weaned, the child would become yours. Basically, she would give birth for you, and it'd become your child. And so that was the plan. She was going to have a child through her maidservant. It was going to be hers. So Sarah, who believes that God is somehow preventing her from having children, God who doesn't want her to have a child, she believes that. She's going to go around God's will and do whatever it takes to have one. She's going to defy the will of God, and I'm going to get a child no matter what. I don't care who this God is or how bad he's trying to stop me. I'm going to get a child. I will defy him to get one. You know, a lot of us come and we're followers of Christ, we're followers of God, and we believe he'll provide so many things for us. There's promises in scriptures that he has for us. There's promises he makes to us personally. You know, some people come to God because they believe that God will provide them wealth, right? They watch these shows on TV. It says, if you send in money, then I will bless you, make you a prosperous person. Or if you say this prayer, you'll just become a wealthy person. Now people do that. They believe God will provide them that. People come to Christ because they believe that he'll give them a sense of security in their life. They live in a, because in their life there's so much chaos in it that God will somehow make everything okay and secure. Our people come to God because they believe that if they come and they worship him and they follow him with their families, then their families will turn out good. They'll be moral, they'll be ethical, the kids will grow up to be honest, moral people. Or if they follow God, he'll bless them, he'll make them happy. There's so many different things we believe that if we follow God we'll have joy, peace. But what happens when we don't get those things? I mean, what happens when we're like Sarah, when we run out of patience? Like God doesn't give it to us when we think we should have it, and we lose our patience. What happens when we believe God will give us wealth and, you know what, we're poor, we can't pay our bills? Or we believe God's going to give us a security, but everything around us is so insecure and there's so many things, chaotic things coming in our lives. Or what do we do when our families and our kids aren't growing up like they should and they're veering off even though we took them to church and we did everything we're supposed to? I mean, what do? When it seems like the promises of God aren't being fulfilled. You know, many of us do the same thing Sarah did. So this is what I want, and I'm going to do whatever it takes to get it on my power. God isn't pulling through for me, so I'm going to make it happen. And I will even defy God to get it. I will make unethical choices. I will do things against his will. I will act immorally to get what I want. So what do? When our kids aren't behaving correctly, we become? We become legalistic with our kids. We become control freaks because I'm going to make you turn out right. Of course, it doesn't work. When our life is full of chaos, we try to control and manipulate the people around us so that we can have a sense of security around us. We come to Christ with significance, and when we don't find it right off, we try to find significance in other things and materials and other things. We're going to make it happen. So oftentimes, if God doesn't give us what we want and we run out of patience, we'll do whatever it takes to get it. We'll lie, we'll manipulate. You know, this happens in churches all the time. There are people who come to church and are like, you know what, I think a church should be just how it was when I grew up and we should have everything exactly the same. And when it doesn't happen, oh man, I will manipulate, I will try to turn things, people against each other so we can gain control and make it how it should be back in the good old days. Or, you know what, church isn't how it should be, it should be this way, it should be newer, and I'm going to put people against each other. I'm going to do whatever it takes. Make comments. Be negative to people so that they will finally turn and, you know what, be open to more ideas. Some of the things we want aren't bad. But it's the playing God of bringing it upon ourselves to take control and do it. That's what's the negative thing. Become like Sarah and we just bulldoze through everything to get what we want. What we think is best. Get our security, get our wealth, get our whatever it is. When I was in junior high at the church I grew up, we had different productions we put on for the church and musicals with acting, you know, musicals and you'd be acting in the parts in it and all that stuff. And we spend like a half a year practicing the songs and another half of the year practicing the acting and the stage and all that stuff. And so it was a big deal to be a part of these skits. And so I remember one skit in particular. I don't remember what it was, but there were tryouts for it. And there's a lead part that I really wanted to get. And there was another guy at church who wanted it as well. And so we were sort of in competition for this lead spot, and both of us really wanted it. And so it came to the point where, you know, we read lines in front of the director, and it came to a point where he had to decide who was going to get the part. And he came to me and he said, "Jacob, I'm going to give you the part, but I want you to get help from your dad on the script. You see, my dad, he loves drama, he loves acting, he loves all that stuff, he's really good at that stuff." And so the director's like, "Jacob, go over with your dad, read through the lines, and have him help you with it. You need to do that. I'm giving you this part because I know he'll help you." So this is great. I got a part. But I don't really need my dad, I thought. I don't want to go to him. I could do this on my own. So I go home and I practice. I'm like, I'm going to practice. I'm going to do this really good. I'm going to get everything I need to get. And I'm going to go over it over and over and over, over and over again. And I'm going to be so good. And he's going to think my dad helped me, but he won't. Won't have. So I go through the script, I practice, and it kind of comes time for the first rehearsal. We're just sitting down, reading through the lines. How easy can that be? And after a few minutes of reading through the lines, the director says to me, "Jacob, you didn't get your dad's help, did you?" I'm like, "Oh, am I that bad?" I'm like, "Oh no, I didn't get his help." He's like, "You go and get your dad's help, and come back next week when we practice." Well, all right, I'll get my dad's help. So I gave in, got my dad's help, and he showed me everything I needed to learn and how to do things. And I came back next week, and he was very pleased. "Jacob, you did a good job." Now, the thing is, I thought I could do this on my own. I thought that, you know what, if I practice enough or I put enough energy into it, I could be somewhat decent in the skit. I don't need my dad's help. But the truth was, I couldn't. It didn't work out as I thought it would work out. I couldn't do it on my own. You know, as we look at Sarah, she thought she could bring her happiness into her life by herself. She thought she could manipulate situations and put enough effort into it, she could bring happiness by bringing this child into her life. But all that brought into her life was chaos. All that brought into her life was pain that even continues on to this day. She thought she could do it on her strength. She thought she could play the role of God in her life. And it doesn't work out. It never works out as you think it will. Anytime when we get too patient for God and we want to become God and bring our own happiness through these different means of wealth or security or whatever, it won't happen. It never works out as we plan. I mean, there's stories. I mean, there's people I know, mainly girls, so sometimes growing up, that were so... I'm not saying only girls, but guys, just, I saw more girls than guys. I don't know. We're not getting to that. But who are so focused that once they get someone to love them in a relationship, they'll be happy. And so these people, they would get the first person that says, "I love you." And they would enter a relationship and they would close their eyes to anything else going on, right? And you've probably seen this. So they enter a relationship where the person's abusive, but they ignore it because, you know what, they give me flowers once in a while. Or the person's emotionally or, you know, abusive or physically, or they're just a jerk. And we see people trying to bring happiness on their own selves and nothing but pain. And it takes a lot of energy to work through those issues. There's story after story of scripture of people defying God to get what they want for happiness and bringing nothing but pain. Story of David and Bathsheba. The story of Ananias and Sapphira in the New Testament trying to, promising to give money but not really giving it all. Probably doing it for status or recognition. There's story after story of our own lives where we try to become God and bring happiness in our own lives, not by following God, but by bringing it ourselves because we're not patient enough, because we don't trust Him. We don't really believe in His promises. And ultimately, if you look at this, it's like Sarah doesn't realize it. "Abraham, look what you've done," she says. "This is on your head. You've brought this on me." She's clueless to the pain she's caused. Clueless that she's responsible. Well, Abraham's partly too, but clueless that she initiated it. Oftentimes we see that when God isn't pulling through for us, when he doesn't give us our promises, often what is happening is he's growing us as individuals, as followers. And when we try to become God, when we try to force our way through things, when we try to bring about our own happiness because by getting this or doing this or manipulating control, nothing but chaos happens. And you know what? And we've seen it in churches as well. People who are so intent to making things certain ways, and what happens is church splits, there's divisions, people leave, people are wounded for life. There comes to a point where we have to say, you know what, God, you know what, Jesus, I'm following you. I'm your servant. I will patiently wait for you to fulfill your promises. I will work towards them, but only under your strength, but only under your permission. I will follow you. I will trust in your promises. And I will not force things through and defy you.